And that's why we are now working on further measures to ensure that we support not just businesses, but also individuals and their families to keep our economy going, as Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, outlined yesterday. We believe that the steps we've already taken, together with those I'm announcing today, are already slowing the spread of the disease, but we will not hesitate to go further and faster in the days and weeks ahead. And we will do whatever it takes so that we beat it together.
Good afternoon, friends, comrades and fellow taxi drivers. You are listening to Patrick Hernandez, Born to be Alive.
Taxi Radio, the station for London's taxi drivers.
Wow, what the hell is happening? That's all I can say. And before I get into the whole catalogue of changes that are happening so rapidly at the moment, does anybody else feel like they are living in a Stephen King novel or something? Or a kind of eugenics horror story straight from a film script, because I know I do. It is beyond anything we have ever known, and it is escalating as we speak. We just need to stay strong, keep ourselves healthy, and remember, if you need to ask for help, then do so. You will be surprised at how many people are willing to put themselves out. Now, the information, as of the last couple of days at least, was to change the course of action. If they didn't change the course of action, then they would risk losing 1 million people in a catastrophic epidemic of coronavirus. Now, if you ask me, warnings do not come much starker than that, do they? The message came from researchers modelling how the disease will spread, how the NHS would be overwhelmed and how many would die. The situation has shifted dramatically and as a result we are now facing the most profound changes to our daily lives in peacetime. The realisation has happened only in the last few days. However, it is long after other scientists and the World Health Organization had warned of the risks of not going all out to stop the virus. The crucial piece of evidence came from scientists at Imperial College London, who first realised the scale of the problem in China and whose advice is heavily influential in government. They said that the coronavirus was the most serious public health threat seen in a respiratory virus since the 1918 flu pandemic, known as Spanish flu. And it is interesting because recently Sadiq Khan tweeted out that it wasn't Chinese flu, that viruses do not recognise nationalities, but historically we tend to name viruses or pandemics after their country of origin, as with Spanish flu or German measles, to name but two. But the Imperial College London said they assessed three strategies. The first being suppression, break chains of transmission, effectively trying to stop the epidemic in its tracks and bring cases down to as low as possible, as China did. Secondly, mitigation, except you cannot stop the coronavirus, so slow its spread and prevent a massive peak in cases that would overwhelm the NHS whilst trying to protect those most at risk. And thirdly, which they've discounted, is do nothing and let the virus tear through the population. It was only on Friday that Sir Patrick Vallance, the chief scientific advisor, explained the mitigation plan to the BBC. He said the aim is to try and reduce the peak, broaden the peak, but not suppress it completely. Also, because the vast majority of people get a mild illness, to build up some kind of herd immunity so people are immune to the disease. If mitigation worked, it would have avoided the most draconian measures other countries have used to build up immunity, which would help limit the spread of coronavirus. Mitigation involves some social distancing strategies, while suppression beefs up those measures, including possible restriction of movement and increased periods of isolation. The modelling projected that if the UK did nothing at all, 81% of people would be affected and a staggering 510,000 people would die from the virus by August. The mitigation strategy is better but would still result in about 250,000 deaths and completely overwhelm the intensive care unit in the NHS. The experience of Italy and the first cases in the UK led to this dawning realisation that about 30% of cases that end up in hospital are expected to need intensive care, such as ventilators. The analysts estimated that limits of intensive care would be exceeded by at least eightfold, even under the most optimistic mitigation plans. Even with the sort of interventions that were being planned and being announced last week, there would be a risk of intensive care units being overwhelmed. The report concluded, suppression is the only viable strategy at this time. It is hoped that deaths could be limited to the thousands or tens of thousands. The government has always said it is following the science and science has changed profoundly. Hence, we should be waving goodbye to pubs, clubs and theatres, work from home, well that's easier said than done, and isolate whole households if any one person becomes sick. However, the suppression approach comes with major problems. It effectively requires shutting down parts of society and there is no exit strategy. As fewer people would be infected, there would be little immunity in the population and cases could soar soon after measures were lifted. The report suggests as well, we may have to wait 18 months for a vaccine, but even that is not guaranteed. Well, folks, when I said we are in this together, we could be in this together for an awful long time. It is worth stressing, isn't it, that this is all based on mathematical models. They make assumptions, they are not perfect, and what they find is not written in science. Dr. Adam Kucharski, another disease modeller who was not part of the Imperial study, said there is no simple solution to this. It is probably the toughest epidemic that he has ever had to analyse. There is no way of it playing out without some serious downsides. We better get used to it, folks.
The lake, a tender-hearted woman saw a poor half-frozen snake. His pretty colored skin had been all frosted with the dew. Oh well, she cried, I'll take you in and I'll take care of you. Take me in, oh tender woman, take me in, yes, for heaven's sake, take me in, tender. The snake. Now she wrapped him up all cozy in a coverture of silk, and then laid him by the fireside with some honey and some milk. Now she hurried home from her work that night as soon as she arrived. Now she found that pretty snake she'd taken in had been revived. Take me in, oh tender woman, take me in, for heaven's sake, take me in, tender woman, sighed the snake. Now she clutched him to her bosom, you're so beautiful, she cried. But if I hadn't have brought you in, by now you might have died. Now she stroked his pretty skin again and then kissed and held him tight. But instead of saying thanks, that snake gave her a vicious bite. Take me in, oh tender woman, take me in, for heaven's sake, take me in, tender woman. Sad the snake. Now I saved you, cried that woman, and you bit me even a while. And you know your bite is poisonous, and now I'm gonna die. Ah, oh, shut up, silly woman, say that a reptile with a grin. Take me in, tender woman, sighed the snake, sighed the snake.
Without a shadow of a doubt, it is absolutely heart-wrenching at the moment to see some of the stories either on Twitter or in the WhatsApp groups of cabbies having to hand back their cabs. But it's not just the practicalities of having to do that, is it? It's the utter sheer dishevelment that everyone is feeling at the moment. The fact that we can't make ends meet, and that's what it comes down to, isn't it? You just have to see some of the tweets and it breaks your heart in two. There is one, especially from a good friend of mine, known as Parker Cabby. I think most of you out there will know Parker. And he's been driving a cab for 26 years and says it's the end of the line for him. And he's posted a picture of his identifier and badge and says he is no longer driving a cab and has got to sign on. Absolutely gutting. Gutting. Another message came from another good friend of mine, Joe the Hoban Cab, who's had to give his cab back to a friend. And these are two people, I may add, that are stalwarts of the cab trade. They are the ones that brought us the tracks We Are London and Good Old Fashioned Christmas, and have recently, with Jamie Owens, began to make a YouTube series documenting London's history called The Cockney Cabbies. These are people that have been entrenched in the cab trade for as long as I can remember. It is absolutely devastating to see these people having to pull out. And not only that, but they are not given any help. None of us will be given any help from the government. Her Majesty's Treasury hasn't provided anything for any self-employed workers. And that doesn't just apply to us. It applies to painters, decorators, driving instructors and examiners and theatre performers. Everybody, absolutely everybody that is self-employed has been thrown to the wolves. If you are employed, then the government is guaranteeing you that you will be paid 75% of your wages. So surely it would be simple and efficient for self-employed people to be paid 75% of their total tax and national insurance contributions for the previous year. That makes sense to me. Anything else in my book is inequitable and discriminatory. And not only that, without doing something like that, or without providing for self-employed people, they risk thrusting people into ill health, don't they? Anthony Minas made another good point on Twitter. He said that he can't help but think that we've fallen once again victim to the gig economy. The Chancellor doesn't want to differentiate between them and real self-employed people. Far too many to deal with, so they've taken the easy option and bolted. And I see him right. The government have to reevaluate this and reevaluate it in the first instance. We are in a situation where we do have a couple of politicians on our side, and David Curtin is one of them. On Friday, he wrote to the Chancellor of the Exchequer to ask if any of the £330 billion support package for businesses would be available to London's 22,000 plus cab drivers, and he was hoping for a positive response. In part, he says, there are many businesses who will be grateful that the government has put in place a plan to support them through this difficult time, but I would like to ensure that London's 22,000 taxi drivers will be eligible to apply for your major business support schemes. Taxi drivers are in a unique position. They operate as self-employed lone traders, but without fixed premises, which are rateable. Due to the precipitous drop in demand for support for transport services, black cab drivers are struggling immensely at this time. He goes on to say, there is a fear that London cab drivers will not be eligible for some of your business relief schemes simply because they do not have rateable premises. I note that you will provide one-off grants of £10,000 to support small businesses that already pay little or no business rates because of small business rate relief, who will be contacted by their local authorities in April. Will London's taxi drivers have access to this or similar schemes? You have also offered the Coronavirus Business Interruption Loan Scheme, which will launch next week, to support businesses to access bank lending and overdrafts. Could you confirm whether the self-employed taxi drivers will have access to this scheme? And he is right. We rely on everybody going to work, going to the shops, going to the theatre, going out to bars, tourism. Everything the cab trade relies on has dried up. There is nothing out there, and there is absolutely no way we can make ends meet. The idea that we might be able to go out and earn or scratch together a few pounds to feed our families is not on the cards. Not only that, but like a lot of self-employed tradesmen, we have costs, don't we? Quite substantial costs, hence why a lot of drivers have no choice but to hand back their cabs. And without a taxi, without the asset, we are unemployed. If the government doesn't pull its finger out, then we are going to see an accumulation of problems within our industry. Not only that, at some point, drivers will start to feel a sense of isolation fatigue, won't they? And will end up going out trying to make themselves useful, and that could defeat the purpose of isolation in the first place. The biggest problem that I have is that back in the day, Ken Livingstone coined the phrase that we were integrated into public transport. Now, in my mindset, and everybody else's mindset for that matter, we still do the same job as we did when Livingstone was mayor, but seemingly, in the mindset of TfL, TPH, the Mayor, the London Assembly and the Department of Transport, we are no longer considered as an integral part of public transport. And the consequences of this are devastating. Everything that is detrimental to us at the moment, everything that is adversely impacting on us as an industry, comes down to the fact that we are no longer considered as part of public transport and therefore no longer part of the solution. So things like Liverpool Street and not being able to drop off next to Platform 10. Network Rail now considers us to be a hostile vehicle. Now, if we were still part of public transport, then there is no way in hell we would be considered to be hostile to that environment. We would still be seen as an integrated mode of transport that aids and facilitates passengers being dropped off and picked up in that area. And this is where my expectation is at fault, because in my own head, I should be out there helping to be part of the solution by transporting around medical and hospital staff, but TfL is formally advising us that we should stay at home. And so even if I wanted to be of use, even if I believe that taxis are designed and purpose-built with safety in mind, and so I should be of benefit to London and the health service, our regulator is telling us not to do that and take the advice from the British government and, like everybody else, to stay at home. I think this is outrageous that TfL is formally recommended that we stay at home without trying to secure any provisions from the government so we might still be able to go out there and feed our families. I think it is an absolute abomination by our regulator that they do not see us as an integral part of public transport or an integral part of the solution. And this is what we are up against, a regulator that doesn't support its own regulated trade. And in my book, a regulator that does not support its own industry is not fit or proper to regulate.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.
Now, I don't know about you, but more than anything this week, what got my back up, well, apart from the document posted out by TfL recommending that we should all stay in, was the tweet from the Deputy Mayor for Transport, Heidi Alexander, with which she paid tribute to train operators, bus drivers, maintenance crew, tube cleaners, and station staff, and thanked them all for enabling essential workers to get around the city and referred to them as London's unsung heroes. Now, I have the utmost respect for anybody that has to go to work through this crisis, but to pay tribute to public sector transport staff who won't in any way be financially impacted on by what is happening is not only offensive, but it shows the contempt that she has for 22,000 plus taxi drivers out there who have been forced into losing their income in its entirety. Now, we don't need to read what music channel Heidi Alexander advises us to listen to. We need to know what support she plans to offer all those that are self-employed and regulated by Transport for London. The front pages of the newspapers over the weekend were dominated by the government's pledge to pay the wages of employees unable to work due to the coronavirus pandemic, as it ordered cafes, pubs and restaurants to close. The Chancellor's offer to pay the wages of those who can't work is historic. The Daily Mail, Independent and the Daily Express all agreed. The Guardian says the intervention, a pledge to pay 80% of salary to staff that are kept on by their employer, covering wages up to £2,500 a month, wouldn't that be nice, is unprecedented. The Daily Mirror says the move is so extraordinary that you had to triple check. But the Daily Telegraph insisted the measures are vital for protecting jobs after the closure overnight of the hospitality and leisure industry, a move which, it points out, is unheard of even in wartime. The necessity for the action seems more urgent given the suggestion by the paper that the number of people dying in Britain is rising faster than in Italy. It says that on average, the number of deaths in Italy has rose by less than 20%, while Britain is seeing them increase by 45%. I mean, that's a catastrophic number. That is over double the rate in Italy. A graph in the Times suggests a less gloomy comparison. But the paper warns the early lower death rates could rise as the outbreak spreads into rural areas where older people are more numerous. The Mail describes the shutdown as the day Britain changed forever. It's a theme taken up by several papers. The Guardian's Jonathan Friedland looks at the transformation within the UK over the last week. He writes about the deserted streets, the economy facing what could be a collapse more catastrophic than the Great Depression, the switch on social media from amateur armchair Brexit experts, miraculously reborn as amateur epidemiologists. But the greatest change, Friedland detects, is the switch of emotion to fear. The Mirror also notes a mood change. Its columnist Fiona Phillips says, gone is the UK's world-renowned chivalry and orderly queuing. In its place is a selfish, rapacious, me-me Britain, she says, where crazed individualists stack the trolleys high. The Independent website says ministers have told the government should promote a sense of collectivism to avoid the risk of panic buying progressing to looting and rioting. The Mail makes the list of what is now open and closed in case of confusion. Clothes, shops, takeaways and hairdressers are still trading, whilst pubs, bookies and leisure centres have shut. A photograph shows a restaurant in central London being boarded up. But the Times warns that Non-food stores may also be at risk unless they can stop customers handling goods. People, its survey indicates, are not following government advice, and only 37% avoid public transport. What struck me the most about that was when Fiona Phillips quite rightly referred to the way crazed individualists stack their trolleys high and the way the government should promote a sense of collectivism. I think that struck a nerve because, unlike wartime, there isn't a sense of community here. We are being forced into isolation, so the rallying of troops and supporting each other in the community isn't going to be there. I think, if anything, we might rely heavily, virtually, on WhatsApp groups to keep each other upbeat and informed. We also want to feel that there are people out there who have the clout and the resources to fight on our behalf. And I guess that's where the orgs come in. Late last week, London's taxi drivers were looking at ways to mobilise and transport nursing and hospital staff and to help the most vulnerable in society in a bid to cover their own expenses during the crisis. The Licensed Taxi Drivers Association contacted FreeNow, Get and Comcab to discuss whether the industry could diversify whilst work levels remain critical. It might all be academic now that we have to stay in, but it seems Get is providing a service to hospital staff and charging £10 no matter the distance. Like I say, it might all be academic. Ideas put forward could see drivers accepting short-term contracts in other sectors to help meet demand. Other sectors being discussed include the possibility of working for delivery companies, the NHS or bus and transport providers. The idea was quickly usurped, however, by a tweet put out by Ursula, who noticed a sign on a taxi window stating NHS travel for free. And she commented on the amazing act of kindness. This was picked up by cabbie Myrna Bourne, of all people, who assisted a cardiologist from the Imperial College London with a database of taxi drivers that would help transport nursing staff and clinicians to and from hospitals free of charge. Back to the LTDA. According to their General Secretary, Steve McNamara, the coronavirus pandemic has rendered over 20,000 self-employed cabbies in London essentially redundant, which is a move away from his previous stance that the trade was benefiting by a 40% boom in business. The LTDA might also want to consider opening up that contingency fund they have, aided by a £21 million sale of Woodfield Road, to help those members that are most in need. Certainly, taxi drivers across the UK are facing dire predicaments, with many under threat of going out of business unless the government provides measures to help self-employed people. Quite literally, as I've stated earlier, the cab trade has been thrown to the dogs across the whole country. As a result of consideration by finance companies, however, garage and fleet owners have moved to announce further reductions in all their rental prices. Garages offering these reductions include ID taxis, Colt cabs, KPM, Sherbet, E1 taxis and others. Ascots are charging nothing on their rentals until further notice. Also, Cabvision announced that if London goes into lockdown, all taxi rentals will be suspended, with the company assuming 100% of the costs. Others that revised their position is Taxi App, which halved its fee to £10 per month, and UTAG has suspended payments until further notice. The London Cab Drivers Club have confirmed, after a conversation with taxi manufacturers LEVC, that finance firm Black Horse have agreed to make a payment holiday available for those on existing finance deals. In an unprecedented move, black cab drivers can now take a three-month payment holiday, which is designed to ease the burden on the trade due to the current crisis. This is what Grant Davis had to say.
Today, I'm informed the chairman of LEVC held a meeting with Black Horse Finance, and they have agreed the nuts and bolts of the deal. It's probably going to come out to us tomorrow. But as of now, Black Horse have agreed a deferred payment of 3 months on your LEVC vehicles, which hopefully will be able to give some drivers a respite on payments. Like I said, they've assured me that the nuts and bolts could be released tomorrow regarding staggering the payments, because if you've got a payment coming out next week, then you're more of a priority than if you've just paid and you've got your next payment that won't be coming out for about 3.5 weeks. So that's how they want to start the staggering process. so that Black Horse don't get a meltdown by all drivers phoning them. Yeah, please don't do that. I've been asked to ask your drivers. I know we're all stressed and we don't know what to do. But they're saying they've agreed a 3-month deferred payment scheme and drivers regarding when their payments will be contacted.
Wes Streeting, the Labour MP for Ilford North, tweeted saying he would be applying a cab driver test to the government's income plan for workers after receiving a harrowing message from a cab driver, which read, "Morning, Wes. I'm contacting you again in my hour of need. You've helped us before, and my God, I need you to do so again. What on earth am I meant to do? I am effectively unemployed. I have savings for about 6 weeks and hoping to freeze my mortgage from April. Even if I qualify, which I probably don't, how can we survive on £94 per week? I can't sleep at night worrying. I'm sure I'm not alone in this, but I don't know who to turn to. Have you any suggestions?" It is a really, really heart-wrenching message, isn't it? And I've got to say, he doesn't have the patent on it, I'm sure. And there are a lot of people out there with similar concerns. And with that, the United Cabbies Group wrote to the Chancellor of the Exchequer with this concern. Trevor Merrill stated, "We have significantly higher costs to operate our business due to the conditions of fitness we are required to work within. Yet we have been excluded from the 3,000 cash grant you propose to grant to 700,000 small businesses. The extension of this grant to the taxi trade would be a financial lifeline. The announcements to date do not go far enough for self-employed taxi drivers who make a significant contribution annually to HMRC. The lack of action at this stage will leave our members and their families with no income and unable to meet their financial commitments. This is not acceptable. And time is not on our side. Action to rectify this hardship is urgently required." We wait to see if the Chancellor can be bothered to respond. Of all the sentiments out there, I think Chris Johnson, aka Charlie Crocker, summed up our relationship with TfL most succinctly. He writes, "The hardship for taxi drivers created by the COVID-19 outbreak could have been prevented if TfL were a competent regulator. Self-employed people like taxi drivers organically earn a net wage that is higher than the national minimum wage because we absorb the risk of unforeseen events. However, due to TfL's harmful policies and failure to regulate the private hire industry, taxi drivers haven't been able to earn an income that allows us to have a contingency fund. As such, it should be a given that TfL, as the regulator, correctly protect a regulated trade like the taxi industry from unfair competition such as Uber and others who do not comply with the employment laws or VAT laws. There is a legal opinion that has been presented to TfL from an eminent QC that states TfL could refuse to license private hire operators who do not comply with UK employment law. TfL has refused to do this, and this is what has decimated the earnings of taxi drivers and forced them into a position where we could never put aside a contingency fund for unforeseen events like COVID-19. TfL are responsible for the hardship and mental health damage that COVID-19 will ultimately cause taxi drivers. It is vitally important that if TfL are going to license private hire operators, then they must not be allowed to license them without compliance with the employment and VAT laws."
No hell below us,
above us only sky.
Imagine all the people
living for today. Yeah.
Imagine there's no countries, yeah.
It isn't hard to do.
Nothing to kill or die for.
And no religion too.
Imagine all the people living for today.
a dreamer, but I'm not the only one.
I hope someday you will join us, and the world will live as one.
Imagine no possessions.
I wonder if you can.
No need for greed and hunger.
Brotherhood of man.
Sharing all the world. You. They may say that I'm a dreamer,
but I'm not the only one.
I hope someday you'll join us,
and the world will be as one.
Now, those of you that know me know that I'm not that great at offering too many words of consolation or being overly sympathetic. I'd rather help, like most people, in a practical, functional way if I can. But at the moment, more than ever, I'm reminded that there is only one thing in our lives that we cannot reacquire once it is gone. And I'm not talking about money, and I'm not talking about material items. I'm talking about time. We are living minutes that we will never, ever get back, and we are breathing air that we will never, ever breathe again. And now is our opportunity to embrace the gift of time. Don't let it slip away. There is no moment more important than now. Not next week, not when the coronavirus is done and dusted, not when you retire and plan to relax, but right now. Allocate your time to the things that mean most to you. Step outside of our heads and into the real world. Let's get through this with a greater understanding of what living truly means. If you need me or want to take part in the show, you can DM me on Twitter at London Taxi Radio or my personal account at Sean Paul Day. You can message me on Facebook, London Taxi Radio, or you can send me an email, sean@londontaxiradio.co.uk. All that's left for me to say is stay safe, be strong, keep healthy, and remember, if you need help, there is no harm in asking for it. You will be surprised at how many people are willing to put themselves out. God bless, and before long, I'll see you out there on the mean streets.
I've paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence but committed no crime. And bad mistakes I've made a few. I've had my shelf and kicked in my face, but I've come through.
And I need to go on.
Yeah.
London Taxi Radio, the station just for cabbies.